Welcome to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you decided to tune in today. If you are a regular listener, welcome back. If you're a new listener, this is where we talk about what's going on in the economy and look at the economy through the eyes of history. We look at macroeconomic cycles that have existed in the past and ask the question, are we going somewhere that is predictable? Can we look at these cycles that have happened in the past and possibly get a perspective on where the markets and where your investments might be going in the future? That's the question we're going to ponder today. My special guest today is Mr. Bill White. Mr. White is a former gubernatorial candidate for the state of Texas. He's also the former mayor of Houston. And Mr. White is going to offer us his perspective on some solutions for government debt and solving some problems in government. Certainly looking forward to that conversation. I'd like to remind you also that if you've not yet checked it out, you can go to the website, newretirementrules.com. The website is newretirementrules.com, and we have one more New Retirement Rules class left in 2014. It will be held on Saturday, November 22, at the East Beltline campus of Western Michigan University. The class begins at 9 a.m., will conclude at 2:30 p.m., and the cost for the class is just $49. That's the total cost for you and a guest. That includes all the handouts. It includes also the book, New Retirement Rules, that you'll get. I'll be talking a bit on today's program about predictable economic cycles, at least that's our perspective, and those are covered in detail in the book. So if you'd like to attend the class, the cost is just $49 for you and a guest. That includes lunch on the 22nd as well. The website to check out is newretirementrules.com. And let me remind you also that the Everything Financial Radio program is available in podcast form. If you can't catch our show at the regularly scheduled time in your area, you can go to the iTunes store, search under Everything Financial Radio, and the show is reproduced there each week in two podcasts. You can subscribe at the iTunes store. The subscription is free. Just search under Everything Financial Radio. I am pleased to have as a first-time guest here on the Everything Financial Radio program, Mr. Bill White. Bill is a senior advisor at Lazard, a firm advising corporate leaders and governments worldwide. He served as Houston's mayor and was twice reelected with an average vote of 88%. He also served as the Deputy Secretary of Energy of the United States in the Clinton administration. He received the prestigious John F. Kennedy Profiles in Courage Award for his leadership in response to Hurricane Katrina, and the Governing Official of the Year Award by Governing Magazine. He's worked as the CEO of a successful business and is a member of numerous corporate boards. And in 2010, he received more votes for the governor of Texas than any Democratic candidate in the state's history. And it's a pleasure to have you on the program, Bill. Welcome.
It's great to be with you.
Well, Bill, your book, America's Fiscal Constitution, Its Triumph and Collapse, I'll let everybody know, is available on Amazon. Tell us about the premise of the book, if you would.
I wanted to tell the story about how for almost two centuries, America had contained the burden of debt by limiting the purposes for which it borrowed. The federal government borrowed only to defray the cost of war, to expand or connect the nation's territory during economic downturns, and when states tried to leave the country. And that was it. It never borrowed just to pay ordinary operating expenses. That was remarkable. Other nations always had the temptation of the government officials promising more than they were willing to impose in the price of taxation, and they used debt to disguise the cost of routine government. Since 2001, that fiscal tradition has collapsed, and I wanted to tell the glorious story about generations who fought for that tradition, as well as the consequences of its collapse.
So, Bill, where did we collectively, as a country, go wrong? What led to this change in policy?
See, this is one of the interesting sort of stories in the book. There was no change in the mood of the American people abruptly at the end of 2000. As a matter of fact, political leaders in both parties, as well as the public, applauded the fact that the United States had balanced its budget after many years of trying to bring revenues and expenditures in line. Business leaders understood that when there was less pressure by federal borrowing, there was more available for private investment. Most Americans understood that when the government borrowed money, it would have to be paid back with interest later on, so that deficits were just another form of taxation, deferred taxation. But beginning in 2001, each party, beginning with the Republicans and followed by the Democrats, adopted a tax policy and a spending policy, which were not related. So we began reducing taxes while raising many different categories of spending. For the first time in the history of the country, we borrowed massive amounts from foreign governments without much of a public outcry. And, of course, the leaders in neither political party found it in their interest to sort of advertise the fact that they had elevated other priorities above fiscal responsibility.
So, Bill, with national debt now at about $17.5 trillion, with, according to the Social Security Trustees report, an equal amount of unfunded liabilities in Social Security. In fact, Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff was on the program a few weeks ago and stated that, in his view, the fiscal gap of the United States was over $200 trillion. How does all this play out? How is the average American going to be affected by all this?
Well, the it'll be in subtle ways at first. People will see debt service rising, which they won't see in their life. You can read it in the statistic. Debt service is going to be the fastest growing federal program, with debt service almost tripling over the next 10 years. And what that will do is it will crowd out other spending that's been part of what Americans have had since, the 1930s and 40s. And that would include basic scientific research and things like cancer and basic physics, which has provided a lot of the support for applied science. It'll be criminal justice. It'll be aid to education, infrastructure, all those things which are in this category that it was called federal domestic discretionary spending. And it will also, and is already, imposing limits on our ability to have a global security umbrella, which has been in effect since shortly after World War II. The United States has played a unique role in the world. I'm proud of that role. Sometimes, just like human beings, nations will make mistakes. But by and large, having the United States as the preeminent superpower has benefited this nation and people throughout the world. That status will diminish as we cannot afford the type of military presence we've had in the past. Those will be the first casualties. It won't be that all of a sudden we'll announce we'll default on our debt or something like that. But those will be the first casualties. And then eventually, there will be a question of how long the generation after the baby boomers will be able to retain a Social Security net for older Americans, which include Medicare.
Well, if you're just joining us, we're chatting today with Mr. Bill White. Bill is a senior advisor at Lazard, a firm advising corporate leaders and governments worldwide. He's also the author of America's Fiscal Constitution, Its Triumph and Collapse. And, Bill, we've just got maybe a minute and a half or so left in this segment. You mentioned Social Security, and I think I read a statistic that Social Security and Medicare now account for about 41% of all federal spending. That program is just going to expand because of the rising population of boomers now that are retiring. Do you have any predictions as to how folks that are now collecting Social Security and Medicare might be affected, if at all, by this fiscal situation?
Yeah, they're both a little different. Social Security is in pretty good shape compared to all the rest of the federal budget, including defense and everything else, because there was a reserve fund that was built up after 1983 anticipating the retirement of baby boomers, and rather modest changes in the program could bring the long-term assets and liabilities in line. Medicare is a much, much more serious problem, because since 2001, we've been borrowing to pay for rising Medicare costs and continue to do so.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for this segment. Our guest today is Mr. Bill White. He is the author of America's Fiscal Constitution, Its Triumph and Collapse. You can check out the book at Amazon.com. I'd encourage you to do that. And we will continue our conversation with Mr. White when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you're with me today. I look forward to continuing my conversation with former mayor of Houston and former Texas gubernatorial candidate, Mr. Bill White, in the next segment. You know, in the last segment, I was chatting with Mr. White about the premise of his book, and he had stated that beginning in 2001, the United States broke 200 years of tradition. Prior to that time, the U.S. didn't borrow for normal operating expenses. The U.S. borrowed only when there was a war or they wanted to expand their territory, or when states were threatening to leave the country, they would borrow to deal with those issues. However, they didn't borrow for normal operating expenses until 2001. And he pointed out that just prior to 2001, the U.S. had balanced its budget. Now, in this segment, I'd like you to consider something with me, because those statements by Mr. White, I think, first of all, are absolutely accurate, and secondly, I think that they really point to the whole idea that economic cycles exist, and tax revenues collected by a government are tied very closely to these economic cycles. Now, I talk about these cycles, and I provide this explanation in my book, which is titled New Retirement Rules. And in the book, I talk about the fact that economic cycles exist. Now, the whole idea of economic cycles existing is not a new concept to you if you have been a longtime listener to the Everything Financial Radio program. However, for those of you that are maybe new listeners and those of you that maybe haven't listened in a while, let me give you just a brief explanation of these cycles, and then we'll talk about how that ties to tax revenues, and more importantly, we'll talk about what will happen to future tax revenues and how it might affect markets in which you may be invested. Cycles are really predictable simply because, faced with the same set of facts and circumstances, humans tend to make the same choices time after time. If you think about that, I think you'll agree. Faced with the same set of facts and circumstances, humans tend to make the same choices time after time. Now, there is an economic theory that was developed about 100 years ago, actually, based upon this predictable human behavior. And understanding this theory is vital to understanding where we are today, economically speaking. It's known as the Kondratieff wave theory. Now, this theory was developed in the 1920s by a Russian economist by the name of Nikolai Kondratieff. Mr. Kondratieff was appointed by Russian ruler Joseph Stalin to study capitalism. Now, it's no surprise that Stalin was a staunch opponent of capitalism. And Stalin wanted Kondratieff to conclude, as a result of his study, that capitalism was simply a misguided experiment that could not succeed long term. Now, unfortunately for Kondratieff, he didn't come to that conclusion. Instead, in his landmark work, which was published actually in 1925, and the title of his book was The Major Economic Cycles, and in that book, Kondratieff concluded that capitalist economies move in boom and bust cycles that are predictable because human behavior is predictable, and because the collective behavior of politicians is also predictable. Now, as a side note, Stalin didn't like the results of Kondratieff's work very much, so Kondratieff was relegated to an existence in prison before he faced the firing squad in 1938. Now, Kondratieff's work has lived on, and many modern-day economists have built on Kondratieff's work. And these economic cycles can actually be labeled into four economic subcycles, and for purposes of our discussion today, we'll name them after the seasons of the year. We'll have a spring subcycle, a summer subcycle, an autumn, and a winter subcycle. Now, a brief explanation of each one, just so you get the context, is necessary here. During the spring cycle, you have an economy that experiences a gradual increase in business and employment. Consumer confidence is gradually increasing. Consumer prices begin a gradual increase compared to the level seen during the prior winter cycle. Stock prices rise and reach a peak at the end of the spring cycle. Credit gradually expands, means people are starting to borrow money again. And at the beginning of this cycle, overall debt levels are low. Then we move to summer. During the summer cycle, an economy sees an increase in the money supply, which leads to inflation. Gold prices go up, stock prices go down, and interest rates rise rapidly. Then we go to autumn. Money is plentiful. Gold prices fall, reaching a gold bear market low by the end of the autumn season. And if gold is falling, stocks, from my historical study, are typically rising. So during autumn, we have a massive stock bull market and much speculation. And in the mid-90s, when the U.S. did balance its budget, officially speaking, you saw a major, major stock bull market. Financial fraud is prevalent. Real estate prices rise significantly due to speculation. Debt levels are astronomical, and consumers are really confident because stock prices are up, real estate prices are up, and everybody's working. Then we go to winter. And during winter, an economy experiences a crippling credit crisis and money becomes scarce. Financial institutions are in trouble. There's a lot of bankruptcies at every level, personal, corporate, and government. There's a credit crunch. Interest rates rise. Gold prices go up. Stock prices go down. Now, during this economic autumn season, which we believe the most recent autumn cycle occurred from 1983 to 2000, debt accumulates until the system reaches its capacity for debt. Then, once no more debt can be added to the system, the economic season changes from autumn to winter. And during the winter season, debt has to be purged from the system. Now, what's interesting is that as debt increases, it simply means that folks are borrowing money. Well, when you borrow money, what do you do with it? Well, if you're borrowing money, you're probably buying a house or car. And when you're spending money, tax revenues go up. So that's a really, really key point to understand. Tax revenues are tied to consumption. Now, if you take a look at private sector debt during this last autumn season, I'll just go back and we'll take a look at private sector debt around 1980. Private sector debt was equal to about 100% of U.S. gross domestic product. By the beginning of 2000, that number had more than doubled to 220%. In fact, if you look at a little broader picture from the end of World War II, you saw that private sector debt levels were at 40% of the GDP of the United States, and by 2010, they had reached 300%, a 500% increase. Debt can only increase so much before debt has to be purged from the system, and that's why we saw the financial crisis. Banks had loaned money to folks that maybe weren't very creditworthy, and we find that now these folks can't repay the loans, and banks had assets on their balance sheet that were really loans to folks that couldn't pay the loans, and the assets evaporated, making the banks insolvent. Now, here is the key point. If tax revenues increase as debt accumulates, as debt is purged from the system, tax revenues will have to decline because consumption declines. So when you think about the traditional one-bucket approach to investing, where you might have stock funds and bond funds or stocks and bonds, in this debt-purging winter season, from our historical study, they may not perform as well. We talk about this in our new retirement rules class. We have one more class coming up this year. Last chance to register. The class is one day, November 22. It will be held at the East Beltline campus of Western Michigan University. The class begins at 9 a.m., concludes at 2:30 p.m. You can get more information or register while capacity remains at the website newretirementrules.com. The website, again, is newretirementrules.com. And, again, the cost for the class is just $49. That's the cost for you and a friend, as well as lunch for both of you, the book and all the handouts. And you'll get a copy of the book, New Retirement Rules, when you attend. So again, the website, newretirementrules.com. Check it out if you haven't been to a class. I'll be back after these words and continue my conversation with Mr. Bill White. Stay with us.
Give me your money. Just give me money. Money,
money, money.
Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. We are chatting today with Mr. Bill White, who is a senior advisor at Lazard. That's a firm advising corporate leaders and governments worldwide. Mr. White has served as Houston's mayor. He has worked as CEO of successful businesses. He has a very impressive resume, including Deputy Secretary of Energy in the Clinton administration. And Bill, let me just jump in where we left off. You mentioned this by comparison, Social Security is in pretty good shape, comparing it to Medicare. Give us your thoughts as to some potential solutions, maybe to bring Medicare back to something resembling solvency.
Well, the basic solution would be a resolution by the leaders of one political party or both that we weren't going to borrow money to pay for Medicare, that we would balance the level of taxation supporting Medicare with the level of Medicare benefits. Right now, we've been in this fantasy land where no member of Congress, no mainstream member of Congress, wants to cut Medicare benefits, but nobody has proposed the level of taxation that would bring the revenues going into the Medicare Trust Fund in line with the spending. It used to be, before 2001, that almost 75% of Medicare was paid for by premiums and by the Medicare portion of the payroll withholding tax. Now that is closer to 50%, and the difference has been filled with debt. Look, that's not the way to fund Medicare in the long run. If you want medical bills to skyrocket, just start adding a layer of interest on top of them. And I think we'll have a lot more serious national conversation about issues such as, you know, very expensive procedures issues and choices made at the end of life. These are very difficult issues. They're very personal issues. But often they have been avoided because we've treated the cost as virtually free. It's not. And personally, I think that too many politicians have sort of postured about, well, we can't raise any payroll taxes, or we can't cut any Medicare benefit, or we can't raise taxes on this or that for any purpose, but we're not without having to be forced to choose that the proper trade-off between spending and taxation. And unless we insist on making that choice as a society, it does us no good to fill the gap with debt and pretend as though that's costless. It's very expensive in the long run.
So, Bill, this may not be a fair question, and you can give our listeners some idea as to what this might look like. If we were to cut benefits on Medicare and may raise taxes, maybe some combination thereof, any idea what those tax rates and benefit cuts would look like?
Well, the Medicare tax right now is the broadest base tax. It applies to earned and unearned income. It's higher for those who are in the $400,000 plus bracket. It would not mean that large an increase in the percentage of payroll, 1.5 or 2% of total payroll would help bring Medicare spending in line. And there's other taxes. I'm not presuming to say that there's only one solution. As a citizen, though, I just want to insist that the politicians bring those lines into balance. And on the benefit side, I think the vast majority of Americans think it's a good thing that older Americans are treated with dignity and respect. I think most people pray for the health of loved ones. Medicare doesn't help older people. I mean, before then, it was the families of older Americans who bore so much of that cost and faced the prospect of bankruptcy. I think we broadly support the program. Politicians have not been honest about how it ought to be paid for. And I think probably the discussion on benefits would focus on very high cost benefits and that sort of thing. Some of these pharmaceuticals that come out, they cost hundreds and hundreds of thousands a year to maintain one life on these pharmaceuticals.
Well, we are chatting today with Mr. Bill White, author of America's Fiscal Constitution, Its Triumph and Collapse. And, Bill, in your book, you talk about fiscal heroes who impose clear limits on the use of federal debt. In fact, you know, when you start looking at what the Washingtons and Jeffersons might think about where we are today, what would they think? What's your opinion as to what they would say if they were to suddenly show up and say, hey, here's the fiscal condition of the United States?
Well, the founding fathers would be appalled. They, you know, politics was hot and heavy in the early republic. It was bitter. It was very personal. There was a wide range of views. But on one topic, there was only one view, and that was that the United States should pay down debt and should not incur other debt except for extraordinary purposes, such as the Louisiana Purchase or the war. War of 1812 would be an example. The Constitution itself was a result of a meeting that was convened to discuss how to handle federal debt. That meeting later turned out to be called the Constitutional Convention. We needed to figure out a way to reduce federal debt. And the reason why there was such a consensus is that most Americans then, as now, want to leave the place in better shape for their kids, and they don't want to have all the future tax revenues mortgaged to pay for old bills, leaving their kids with the prospect of fewer public improvements or higher taxes way down the line. Modern-day heroes would be, you know, a good example after World War II. We had some bitter politics in the United States. Harry Truman and Robert Taft, a senator from Ohio who was called Mr. Republican, were highly partisan. Truman a Democrat, Taft a Republican. And they fought over all sorts of things, and it was bare-fisted political fights. But they both agreed that with debt at a very high level after World War II, a level almost as high in terms of the tax revenue as it is today, that the United States shouldn't borrow a penny more. And they both believed in pay-as-you-go budget planning, something that today the leaders of congressional leaders in neither party believe in.
You know, Bill, as I listen to you talk, it just occurs to me that we maybe need some consensus in Washington. And you're closely connected politically. In your view, is there any hope that this gets turned around?
Yes, I mean, I do think there's hope, and the book is designed to give hope because I think a lot of Americans tend to agree with me, and I give a good example of something that happened in 1992. Ross Perot, sort of, you may remember this, came out of the blue.
Yeah.
Not very well-known Texas businessman, plain-spoken, on the Larry King show. And at the time, you had two candidates who were leading candidates, Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush, both of which I think history will treat fairly kindly as being, you know, competent presidents and leaders of their parties, who both acknowledged that it was desirable to balance a budget, but seemed unable to do so. And then, as if a tidal wave hit, within 6 weeks, Perot said that we had to make hard choices, we need to do it, and he soared in front in the presidential poll. I think there's room for reformers in both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party to challenge some of these incumbents and point out the fact that there's a big gap between their tax and spending policies and return us to our fiscal traditions.
So do you see any, you use the term fiscal heroes in the book, do you see any fiscal heroes that may be ready to jump onto the political scene here in the United States?
Well, right now, a lot of their voices have been silenced. In the Democratic Party, they've been silenced by those who are concerned when anybody talks about any changes in the social safety net. And in the Republican Party, they're silenced by those who talk about, you know, we observed last election where former Governor Romney said he wouldn't trade $1 of tax increases for $10 of decreases in spending. But I do talk to members of Congress from both political parties, and they both, in both parties, they are yearning for public voices to come out against our party establishment and say, you know, the plain truth that some people may want a little bit more, you know, benefits, stronger Medicaid, stronger defense would be good examples. But there's no such thing as a free lunch. And if the public is only willing to pay a certain level of taxes and no more, then the public should not expect benefits that exceed that cost.
Well, we are chatting today with Mr. Bill White. The book is America's Fiscal Constitution, Its Triumph and Collapse. And, Bill, I've got time for one more question. I noted in an article that you wrote recently that federal debt amounts to $120,000 for every single working American. That's a staggering number, and that number is only going to go up. How do you see this ultimately playing out as far as U.S. debt is concerned?
I think there's two roads. Either reformers are going to speak up and true fiscal conservatives are going to restore that in the political party. People who are really concerned about sustainability are going to retake the Democratic Party. I don't know whether they occur at the same time or one goes first, but either that's going to happen, or we're going to continue to borrow money to pay for rising debt service, and that's called compound interest. We've been compounding interest since 2001, and I tell you, compound interest is why, you know, if you double a penny on the first day, then there's, you know, you have $1 million plus at the end of the month. It's how cancer spreads, is through compounding. And you can beat compound interest in a sprint. You can endure it for a while, but no nation can ever endure compound interest in the long run without winding up like Greece did.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Mr. Bill White. The book is America's Fiscal Constitution, Its Triumph and Collapse. I'd encourage you to check it out at Amazon.com. Bill, I very much enjoyed the conversation today, and thank you for joining us.
You bet. You take care.
Everything Financial Radio returns after this. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen, and special thanks to our guest on this week's program, Mr. Bill White. You know, in the last segment, Mr. White talked about the fact that the solution to making Medicare solvent is to first agree not to borrow money to pay for the program. And then he gave what I thought was just a startling statistic. In calendar year 2000, 75% of the costs related to Medicare were covered by Medicare premiums. Today, just 50% of the costs of Medicare are covered by the premiums. The difference, of course, goes to debt accumulation. And debt accumulation is limited. You can only accumulate debt to a certain point. It's not infinite. And when you look at the choices that policymakers and politicians have when it comes to, and I'm talking about policymakers and politicians collectively, they really have three choices to cover deficits. Choice number one, they can raise taxes. Choice number two, they can cut spending. Or choice number three, they can print money. Well, when you think about the first two choices, raising taxes or cutting spending, neither of those choices are very popular. Raising taxes and cutting spending, in the case of Medicare, it would be cutting spending for benefits paid. In both cases, pain is inflicted on the electorate. And if you're a politician that wants to get elected, inflicting pain on the folks that are going to re-elect you or elect you in the first place is a bad idea if you want to get elected. Now, economist Ludwig von Mises understood this tendency of politicians to print money. If you're not familiar with Ludwig von Mises, he was a chief economic advisor to the Austrian government in the 1920s. Mr. von Mises passed away in 1973, but he was credited with single-handedly slowing down Austrian inflation, and he developed his own private seminar relating to economics, which attracted the outstanding young economists, social scientists, and philosophers of Europe at that time. Mr. von Mises was the founder of the Neo-Austrian School of Economics, and he developed a business cycle theory, which obviously we do subscribe to here as well. Now, Mr. von Mises said, and this is a great quote, "True, governments can reduce the rate of interest in the short run." Does that sound familiar? He said, "True, governments can reduce the rate of interest in the short run. They can issue additional paper money." Does that sound familiar as well? "They can open the way to credit expansion by the banks. They can thus create an artificial boom and the appearance of prosperity. But such a boom is bound to collapse sooner or later and to bring about a depression." I want to repeat that. "True, governments can reduce the rate of interest in the short run. They can issue additional paper money. They can open the way to credit expansion by the banks. They can thus create an artificial boom and the appearance of prosperity. But such a boom is bound to collapse sooner or later and bring about a depression." Now, if you stop and think about a minute what has transpired of late in the United States, certainly interest rates are at all-time lows. The Federal Reserve has printed literally $4 trillion out of thin air. And when you look at what outcome might come about as a result of this action, we think all you have to do is go back and look at three prior times in U.S. history when this occurred as well. Now, we previously discussed that during an autumn season, an autumn economic season, there's an artificial boom and an appearance of prosperity. This was discussed by von Mises. "When debt, however, reaches its capacity, this autumn season changes to a winter season, and a depression or severe recession, as von Mises discussed, occurs." Now, if you go back all the way in U.S. history to 1817, the second central bank of the United States was chartered. The country at that time was dealing with massive debts accumulated during the War of 1812, and the politicians of the day had three choices to close the debt or deficit. They could raise taxes, cut spending, or print money. Well, the second central bank, like today's central bank, the Federal Reserve, printed money. Now, after the bank's charter was not renewed, state and regional banks were allowed to issue currency, and this resulted in even more easy money and more widely available credit. Now, we have discussed, and it's a really important point, that without widely available easy credit, the system cannot reach its capacity for debt, and asset price bubbles cannot form. In the economic autumn season of the 1830s, however, as a result of this easy credit, a real estate bubble formed and subsequently burst. Probably sounds familiar. During this time frame, speculators abounded. It was a typical autumn season asset bubble that was fueled by easy credit. However, it all came crashing down. The money printing led to bubbles. And in 1837, something called the Panic of 1837 set off what was the most serious depression in the United States' early history. Then you need to turn the clock ahead to the next autumn season that began in 1866. At that time, price bubbles and assets formed, and easy credit was again the cause. Now, how did this happen? Well, in 1863 and 1864, national banking acts were passed into law. At this time, or I should say prior to these laws being passed, only gold and silver could back paper money. In other words, you could only print enough paper money as you had gold or silver to back it up. After the law was passed, money was backed by gold, silver, and government debt. Essentially, this allowed money printing to take place. So by just changing the rules, they could print money and the war could be financed. The Civil War, in this case, could be financed. However, after the war, because of this abundant easy credit, asset price bubbles formed again because debt in the private sector was building. During the autumn season of 1866, mortgages were easy to get. Half-built buildings were accepted as collateral because anyone could get credit. a bubble continued to build. Railroad construction had been going on at a massive pace. Complicated bonds that many investors didn't understand were used to finance the railroad construction. A bubble built, and as always happens, the bubble burst. Railroad companies failed, large banks failed, the stock market crashed, and a deflationary period followed when debt had to be purged from the system. Something called the Long Depression of 1873 was a result of the asset bubbles that built up in the late 1860s. 1873 was simply a repeat of 1837. A couple details were all that set them apart. And then in the 1920s, the pattern repeated itself again. The newly formed Federal Reserve, the nation's third central bank, was founded in 1913. After the central bank was founded, the backing of the U.S. dollar by gold was reduced to 40% of its prior level, and the money supply expanded 250%. That led to private sector debt expanding to unsustainable levels during the economic autumn season of the 1920s. Then, as always happens, the system's capacity for debt was reached. The debt accumulation trend reversed and transformed itself into the debt-purging deflationary period of the 1930s, which was the last economic winter season, and historically that's known as the Great Depression. Now, if you take a look at what's happened of late, what's happened recently? Well, back in the early 1990s, then Chairman Alan Greenspan reduced interest rates to as low as 3%. Debt levels began to build. The system reached its capacity for debt, we believe, by 2000. And now, interest rates in 2007 and 2008, as a result of the financial crisis, as a result of this bubble bursting, were reduced to 0%. That didn't create the desired outcome, so the Fed now has been printing money, and we believe another bubble has formed. Now, what risk does that pose for you? How should you protect your nest egg? What should you do? Well, we'd like to give you a different perspective by inviting you to attend our last new retirement rules class of the year. It will be held on November the 22nd. It'll be held at the East Beltline campus of Western Michigan University. If you would like to attend the class or get more information, all you have to do is visit newretirementrules.com. You can get more information there or register while capacity remains. The cost for the class is just $49. That's the cost for you and a guest, as well as the book and all the handouts and even lunch for you and your guests. So again, I'd encourage you to go check out newretirementrules.com. That's the website where you can get more information about the class. It's the last class of the year. That's our show for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back again next week. Bye.